Chapter 14. Doses of Fork Root.
Light, Perrin whispered to Gaul, looking across the landscape. It's dying.
The boiling, thrashing, churning black sky of the wolf dream was nothing new, but the storm that the sky had been foreshadowing for months had finally arrived. Wind blew in enormous gusts, moving this way, then that, in unnatural patterns. Perrin closed his cloak, then strengthened it with a thought, imagining the ties holding it to be fixed strongly in place. A little bubble of calmness extended out from him, deflecting the worst of the winds. It was easier than he anticipated, as if he'd reached for a heavy piece of oak and found it as light as pine. The landscape seemed less real than it usually did. The raging winds actually smoothed out hills, like erosion at high speed. In other places, the land swelled up, forming ripples of rock and new hillsides. Chunks of earth sprayed into the air, shattering. The land itself was coming apart. He grabbed Gaul's shoulder and shifted the two of them away from the place. It was too close to Rand, Perrin suspected. Indeed, as they appeared on the familiar plain to the south, the place where he'd hunted with Hopper, they found the storm less powerful. They stowed their heavy packs, laden with food and water, in a thicket of bushes. Perrin didn't know if they could survive on food or water found in the dream, but he didn't want to have to find out. They should have enough here for a week or so, and as long as they had a gateway waiting for them, he felt comfortable, or at least satisfied, with the risks he was taking here. The landscape here wasn't coming apart in the same way as it had been near Sheol Ghul. However, if he watched a section long enough, he could catch bits of, well, everything being pulled up in the winds. Stalks of dead grain, fragments of tree trunks, gobs of mud and slivers of rock. All were slowly being pulled toward those gluttonous black clouds. After the way of the wolf dream, when he looked back, things that had been broken apart would often be whole again. He understood. This place was being consumed slowly, as was the waking world. Here it was simply easier to see. The winds whipped at them, but weren't so strong that he had to keep them at bay. They felt like the winds at the beginning of a storm, right before the rain and lightning, the heralds of oncoming destruction. Gaul had pulled the shufa over his face and looked about suspiciously. His clothing had changed in shade to match the grasses.
"You have to be very careful here, Gaul," Perrin said. "Your idle thoughts can become reality."
Gaul nodded, then hesitantly unveiled his face.
"I will listen and do as instructed."
It was encouraging that Gaul's clothing didn't change too much as they walked through the field.
"Just try to keep your mind clear," Perrin said. "Free of thought. Act by instinct, and follow my lead."
"I will hunt like the Gara," Gaul said, nodding. "My spear is yours, Perrin Ebarra."
Perrin walked through the field, worried that Gaul would accidentally send himself somewhere by thinking of it. The man barely suffered any effects of the wolf dream, however. His clothing would change a little if he was startled, his veil snapping into place without him reaching for it, but that seemed to be the extent of it.
"All right," Perrin said. "I'm going to take us to the Black Tower. We hunt a dangerous prey, a man named Slayer. You remember Lord Luke?"
"The Lupengini," Gaul said. Perrin frowned. "It is a type of bird," Gaul said, "from the Threefold Land. I did not see this man often, but he seemed to be the type who talked big but was inwardly a coward."
"Well, that was a front," Perrin said. "And either way, he is a very different person in the dream. Here he is a predator named Slayer, who hunts wolves and men. He's powerful. If he decides to kill you, he can appear behind you in an eye blink and imagine you captured by vines and unable to move. You'll be trapped as he slits your throat."
Gaul laughed.
"That's funny?" Perrin asked.
"You act as if this is something new," Gaul explained.
Yet in the first dream, wherever I go, I am surrounded by women and men who could tie me in air with a thought and kill me at any time. I am accustomed to being powerless around some, Paranebara. It is the way of the world in all things. Still, Perrin said sternly, if we find Slayer, he's a square-faced fellow with eyes that don't seem totally alive, and he dresses in dark leather. I want you to stay away from him. Let me fight him. But you said you'd obey, Gaul, Perrin said. This is important. He took Hopper. I won't have him taking you as well. You don't fight Slayer.
Very well, Gaul said. I give my oath on it. I will not dance the spears with this man unless you order it.
Perrin sighed, imagining Gaul standing with his spears put away, letting Slayer kill him because of this oath. Light, but Aiel could be prickly.
You can fight him if he attacks you, Perrin said, but only as a means of escape. Don't hunt him. And if I'm fighting him, stay out of the way, understand?
Gaul nodded. Perrin put a hand on the Aiel's shoulder, then shifted them in the direction of the Black Tower. Perrin had never been there before, so he had to guess and try to find it. The first shift was off, taking them to a section of Andor where grass-covered hills seemed to dance in the churning winds. Perrin would have preferred to just leap from hilltop to hilltop, but he didn't think Gaul was ready for that. He used shifting instead. After 4 or 5 tries, Perrin took them to a place where he spotted a translucent, faintly purple dome rising in the distance.
What is it? Gaul asked. Our goal, Perrin said. That is the thing keeping Grady and Niald from creating gateways to the Black Tower. Just as we were afflicted in Gildan. Yes.
Seeing that dome brought back memories, vivid ones, of wolves dying. Perrin suppressed them. Memories like that could lead to idle thoughts here. He allowed himself a burning anger deep within, like the warmth of his hammer. But that was all.
Let's go,
Perrin said, shifting them down in front of the dome. It looked like glass.
Pull me free if I collapse, he said to Gaul,
then stepped into the barrier. It felt as if he'd hit something incredibly cold. It sucked away his strength. He stumbled, but he kept his mind on his goal. Slayer, killer of wolves, Hopper's murderer. Perrin straightened as his strength returned. This was easier than it had been last time. Being in the wolf dream in the flesh did make him stronger. He didn't have to worry about pulling himself into the dream too strongly and leaving his body to die in the real world. He moved slowly through the barrier, as if through water, and stepped out onto the other side. Behind, Gaul reached out with a curious expression on his face, then tapped the dome with his index finger. Gaul immediately dropped to the ground, going limp like a doll. His spears and arrows tumbled away from his body, and he lay perfectly still, his chest not rising. Perrin reached through, his arm slow, and seized Gaul by the leg to pull him through. Once on the other side, Gaul gasped, then rolled over, groaning. He sat up, holding his head. Perrin quietly fetched the man's arrows and spears for him.
This is going to be a good experience for building our G, Gaul said.
He stood up and rubbed his arm where he'd hit the ground.
The wise ones call coming to this place as we do evil. It seems to me they would enjoy bringing men here to teach them.
Perrin eyed Gaul. He hadn't realized that the man had heard him speaking to Adara of the wolf dream.
What did I do to deserve your loyalty, Gaul?
Perrin said, mostly to himself. Gaul laughed.
It is not anything you did. What do you mean? I cut you down from that cage. That's why you follow me.
That's why I began following you, Gaul said.
It is not why I remained. Come, is there not a danger that we hunt?
Perrin nodded, and Gaul veiled his face.
Together they walked beneath the dome, approaching the structure within. It was a goodly distance from the edge of one of these domes to the center, but Perrin didn't want to jump and be surprised, so they continued on foot, crossing a landscape of open grasslands patched with groves of trees. They walked for about an hour before they spotted the walls. Tall and imposing, they looked like those around a large city. Perrin and Gaul walked up to them, Gaul scouting with great care, as if he expected to be fired upon at any moment. However, in the wolf dream, these walls wouldn't be guarded. If Slayer were in here, he would lurk at the heart of the dome, at the center, and he'd probably have laid a trap. Perrin rested his hand on Gaul's shoulder and brought them to the top of the wall in an instant. Gaul prowled to one side, crouching low and peeking into one of the covered guard posts. Perrin went to the inner edge of the wall, looking in. The Black Tower wasn't as imposing as the outside implied. A distant village of huts and small houses, and beyond that, a large building project.
"They're arrogant, wouldn't you say?"
a feminine voice asked. Perrin jumped, spinning, summoning his hammer to his hands and readying a brick wall around himself for protection. A short young woman with silver hair stood next to him, standing straight as if to try to appear taller than she was. She wore white clothing, tied at the waist with a silver belt. He didn't recognize the face, but he did know her scent.
"Moon Hunter," Perrin said, almost a growl. "Lanfear."
"I'm not supposed to use that name any longer," she said, tapping one finger on the wall. "He's so strict with names."
Perrin backed away, glancing from side to side. Was she working with Slayer? Gaul appeared out of the guard post and froze, seeing her. Perrin held out a hand to stop him. Could he jump to Gaul and be away before she attacked?
"Moon Hunter?" Lanfear asked. "Is that what the wolves call me?" "That's not right. Not at all. I don't hunt the moon. The moon is mine already."
She leaned down, resting her arms on the chest-high battlement.
"What do you want?" Perrin demanded.
"Vengeance," she whispered. Then she looked at him. "The same as you, Perrin."
"I'm to believe you want Slayer dead too?"
"Slayer? That orphan errand boy of Moradin's? He doesn't interest me. My vengeance will be against another."
"Who?"
"The one who caused my imprisonment," she said softly, passionately.
Suddenly she looked toward the skies. Her eyes widened in alarm, and she vanished. Perrin passed his hammer from one hand to the other as Gaul crept forward, trying to watch all directions at once.
"What was that?"
he whispered.
"Aes Sedai?" "Worse," Perrin said with a grimace. "Do the Aiel have a name for Lanfear?"
Gaul drew in a sharp breath.
"I don't know what she wants," Perrin said. "She's never made any sense to me. With any luck, we merely crossed paths, and she will go on with what she was about."
He didn't believe that, not after what the wolves had told him earlier. Moonhunter wanted him.
"Light as if I didn't have enough trouble."
He shifted them down to the bottom of the wall, and they continued. Tovain knelt beside Loghain. Andril was forced to watch as she caressed his chin, his wearied eyes open and watching her with horror.
"It's all right," she said sweetly. "You can stop resisting. Relax, Loghain. Give in."
She had been turned easily. Apparently, linked with 13 half-men, it was easier for male channelers to turn female channelers, and vice versa. That was why they were having so much trouble with Loghain.
"Take him," Tovain said, pointing at Loghain. "Let's see this done, once and for all. He deserves the peace of the great lord's bounty."
Taim's minions dragged Loghain away. Andral watched with despair. Taim obviously considered Loghain a prize. Turn him and the rest of the Black Tower would go easily.
Many of the boys up above would come willingly to their fate if Loghain ordered them to it.
How can he keep fighting? Andral thought.
Stately Amaran had been reduced to a whimpering wreck after only 2 sessions, though he hadn't yet been turned. Loghain had suffered nearly 12, and still he resisted. That would change, for Taim now had women. Soon after Tovain's turning, others had arrived, sisters of the Black Aja, led by a horridly ugly woman who spoke with authority. The other Reds who had come with Pavara had joined them. Drowsy concern flowed through Pavara's bond to Andral. She was awake, but full of that drink that stopped her from channeling. Andral's own mind felt relatively clear. How long had it been since they'd forced him to drink the dregs out of the cup they'd first given to Amaran?
Loghain will not last much longer.
Pavara's sending was laced with fatigue and growing resignation.
What are...
She cut off, thoughts growing muddled.
Burn me. What are we going to do?
Loghain screamed in pain. He hadn't done that before. It seemed a very bad sign. By the doorway, Evan stood and watched. He looked over his shoulder suddenly, jumping at something.
Light, Andral thought. Could it be his madness caused by the taint? Is it still there?
Andral noticed for the first time that he was shielded, which they never did to captives unless letting their dose of fork root wane so they could be turned. That sent a spike of panic through him. Were they coming for him next?
Andral?
Pavara sent.
I have an idea. What?
Andral started coughing through his gag. Evan jumped, then came over, bringing out his water flask and pouring water on the gag. Abors, one of Taim's flunkies, lounged against the wall. He was holding the shield. He glanced at Andral, but something at the other side of the room drew his attention. Andral coughed worse, so Evan untied the gag and rolled him to the side, letting him spit out the water.
Quiet now,
Evan said, glancing back at Abors, who was too far away to hear.
Don't make them angry at you, Andral.
The turning of a man to the shadow was not perfect. While it changed their allegiance, it did not change everything about them. The thing in Evan's head had his memories, his personality, and, the light send, his failings.
Have you convinced them?
Andral whispered.
Not to kill me.
I have, Evan said, leaning low, eyes frenzied.
They keep saying you're useless since you can't channel very well, but none of them like making gateways to shuffle people about. I told them you'd do it for them. You will, won't you?
Of course, Andral said.
It's better than dying.
Evan nodded.
They stopped your dose of fork root. They'll take you next after Loghain. Mihail was finally sent new women from the Great Lord, women who aren't tired from channeling all the time. Them and Tovain and the Reds mean it should go quickly now. Mihail should have Loghain by the end of the day.
I'll serve them, Andral said. I'll swear to the Great Lord.
That's good, Andral, Evan said. But we can't let you go until you've been turned. Mihail won't accept just an oath. It will be all right. I told them that you'd turn easily. You will, won't you? Not resisting?
I won't resist.
Thank the Great Lord, Evan said, relaxing.
Oh, Evan, you were never terribly bright.
Evan,
Andral said softly,
you need to watch out for Abors. You know that, right?
I'm one of them now, Andral, Evan said. I don't have to worry about them.
That's good, Andral whispered. What I heard him say about you must have been nothing.
Evan fidgeted. That look in his eyes, it was fright. The taint had been cleansed. Jonath, Amaran, and the other new Ashaman would never have to suffer the madness. It manifested differently in different Ashaman and at different rates. However, the fear was the most common. It came in waves. It had been consuming Evan when the cleansing happened.
Andril had seen Ashaman need to be put down as the taint overwhelmed them. He knew that look in Eben's eyes well. Though the lad had been turned, he still carried the madness with him. He would do so forever.
"What did he say?" Eben said. "He didn't like it that you had been turned," Andril said. "He thinks you'll take his place."
"Oh."
"Eben, he might be planning to kill you. Take care."
Eben stood up.
"Thank you, Andril."
He walked away, leaving Andril ungagged.
"That can't possibly work," Pevara sent drowsily.
She hadn't lived among them long enough. She hadn't seen what the madness could do, and didn't know to recognize it in the eyes of the Ashaman. Normally, when one of them became like this, they would take him and confine him until he rode it out. If that didn't work, Taim added something to their wine, and they didn't wake up. If they weren't stopped, they would descend to destruction. They would kill those closest to them, lashing out first at people they should have loved. Andril knew that madness. He knew it was inside of him, too.
"This is a mistake, Taim," he thought. "You use our own friends against us, but we know them better than you do."
Eben struck at Abor's. It came in a burst of the One Power. A second later, Andril's shield dropped. Andril embraced the source. He was not very strong, but he had enough power to burn away a few ropes. He rolled free of his bindings, hands bloodied, and took stock of the room. He hadn't been able to see it before. Not entirely. The room was bigger than he'd assumed, the size of a small throne room. A wide circular dais dominated the far end, topped by a double ring of Myrdral and women. He shivered as he saw the fades.
Light, but that eyeless gaze was awful.
Taim's exhausted men stood by the far wall, the Ashaman who had failed to turn Loghain. He sat on the dais, slouching and tied to a chair in the center of the double ring. Like a throne. Loghain's head rolled to the side, his eyes closed. He appeared to be whispering something. Taim had spun, furious, toward Eben, who fought with Mishrael beside Abor's smoking corpse. Eben and Mishrael each held the One Power, wrestling on the floor, a knife in Evan's hands. Andril scrambled toward Amarin, then nearly fell on his face as his legs gave out.
Light.
He was weak, but he did manage to burn away Amarin's bonds, then Pavara's. She shook her head, trying to clear it. Imaran nodded in gratitude.
"Can you weave?" Andril whispered.
Taim's attention was on Evan's fight. Imaran shook his head.
"The drink they gave us."
Andril clung to the One Power. Shadows began to lengthen around him.
"No," he thought. "No, not now."
A gateway. He needed a gateway. Andril sucked in the One Power, forming the weave for traveling. And yet, as before, he hit some kind of barrier, like a wall preventing him from opening the gateway. Frustrated, he tried to make one to a closer destination. Perhaps distance mattered. Could he make a gateway to Candler's store above them? He struggled against that wall, fighting with everything he had. He strained, inching closer. He could almost do it. He felt as if something was happening.
"Please," he whispered. "Please open. We need to get out of here."
Eben fell to Taim's weave.
"What was that?"
Taim bellowed.
"I don't know,"
Mishrael said.
"Eben attacked us. He had been talking to the page boy and..."
Both spun toward Andril. Andril stopped trying to make the gateway, instead flinging a weave of fire in desperation toward Taim. Taim smiled. By the time Andril's tongue of fire reached him, it vanished into a weave of air and water that dissipated it.
"You are a persistent one," Taim said, slamming Andril against the wall with a weave of air.
Andril gasped in pain. Imaran stumbled dizzily to his feet, but a second wave of air knocked him down. Dazed, Andril felt himself hoisted up and pulled across the room. The ugly woman wearing black stepped out of the circle of Aes Sedai and walked up beside Taim.
"So, Mahale," she said, "you are not nearly as in control of this place as you indicated."
I have inferior tools, Taim said. I should have been given more women earlier.
You ran your Ashaman to exhaustion, the woman replied. You squandered their strength.
I will take charge here.
Taim stood on the dais beside Loghain's slumped form, the women and the fades. He seemed to consider this woman, perhaps one of the Forsaken, a greater threat than anyone else in the room.
You think that will work, do you? Taim asked.
When the Nablus hears of how you are bungling...
The Nablus? I care not for Moradin. I have already provided a gift to the great lord himself.
Beware, I am in his favor.
I hold the keys in my hands, Hesalam.
You mean you actually did it? You stole them?
Taim smiled. He turned back to Andral, who hung in the air, struggling without success. He wasn't shielded. He flung another weave at Taim, but the man blocked it indifferently. Andral wasn't even worth shielding. Taim dropped him from the weaves of air. Andral hit the ground hard. He grunted.
How long have you trained here, Andral? Taim asked. You shame me. That is the best you can do when trying to kill?
Andral struggled to his knees. He felt pain and worry from Pavara behind, her mind clouded with fork root. In front of him, Loghain sat on his throne, locked in place, surrounded by the enemy. The man's eyes were closed. He was barely conscious.
We are done here, Taim said. Mishrael, kill these captives. We will take those above and carry them to Shael Ghul. The Great Lord has promised me more resources for my work there.
Taim's lackeys approached. Andral looked up from his knees. The darkness grew all around, shapes moving in the shadows. The darkness. It terrified him. He had to let go of Sayedin. He had to. And yet, he could not. He had to begin weaving. Taim glanced at him, then smiled and wove balefire.
Shadows all around.
Andral clung to the power.
The dead. They come for me.
He wove by instinct, the best weave he knew. A gateway. He hit that wall. That blasted wall.
So tired. Shadows. Shadows will take me.
A white-hot bar of light sprang from Taim's fingers, pointed right at Andral. Andral shouted, straining, thrusting his hands forward and snapping his weave into place. He hit that wall and heaved. A gateway, the width of a coin, opened in front of him. He caught the stream of balefire in it. Taim frowned, and the room grew still, stunned Ashaman pausing their weaves. At that moment, the door to the room exploded inward. Canler, holding the One Power, roared in. He was followed by the 20 or so Two Rivers boys who had come to train in the Black Tower. Taim yelled, embracing the source.
We are attacked!
The dome seemed to be centered on the building project he'd noted. That was bad. With those foundations and pits, Slayer would have plenty of places to hide and ambush him. Once they reached the village, Perrin pointed to a particularly large building. Two stories, built like an inn with a solid wooden roof.
I'm going to take you up there, Perrin whispered. Ready your bow. Yell if you spot anyone trying to sneak up on me, all right?
Gaul nodded. Perrin shifted them up onto the top of the building, and Gaul took position by the chimney. His clothing blended to match the color of the clay bricks, and he stayed low, bow out. It wouldn't have the range of a longbow, but from here he'd be deadly. Perrin dropped to the ground, floating softly the last inch or so in order to keep from making noise. He crouched and shifted to the side of the building just ahead. He shifted again to the edge of the last building in the row before the excavation, then looked over his shoulder. Gaul, hidden quite well above, raised his fingers. He had tracked Perrin. From here, Perrin crept forward on his belly, not wanting to shift to a place he couldn't see directly. He reached the lip of the first cavernous foundation hole and looked down on a dirt floor. The wind still blew, and dust swirled down below, obscuring any tracks that might have been left. Perrin rose to a crouch and began to make his way around the perimeter of the large foundation. Where would the exact center of the dome be? He couldn't tell. It was too large. He kept his eyes open. His attention was so focused on the foundation holes that he nearly walked right into the guards. A quiet chuckle from one of them alerted him, and he shifted immediately, jumping to the other side of the foundation and dropping to his knees, Two Rivers' longbow appearing in his hands. He scanned the area he'd left, now distant.
Fool,
he thought, finally spotting them. The two men lounged in a shack built beside the foundations. The shack was the type of structure you'd expect workers to take meals in. Perrin looked about anxiously, but Slayer did not rise out of hiding to attack him, and the two guards failed to spot him. He couldn't make out many details, so he cautiously shifted back to near where he'd been. He dropped down into the foundation and created an earthen ledge on its side to stand on while peering over the lip of the hole into the shack. Yes, there were two of them, men in black coats. Ashaman. He thought he recognized them from the aftermath of Dumai's Wells, where they had rescued Rand. They were loyal to him, weren't they? Had Rand sent help for Perrin?
Light burn that man, Perrin thought. Couldn't he just be up front with everyone for once?
Of course, even Ashaman could be dark friends. Perrin debated climbing out of the pit and confronting them.
Broken tools, Lanfear said idly.
Perrin jumped, cursing to find her standing on the ledge beside him, peeking up at the two men.
They've been turned, she said. I've always found that to be a wasteful business. You lose something in the transformation. They will never serve as well as if they'd come willingly. Oh, they'll be loyal. But the light is gone. The self-motivation. The spark of ingenuity that makes people into people.
Be quiet, Perrin said. Turned? What do you mean? Is that...
13 Murdral and 13 Dreadlords, Lanfear sneered. Such crudeness. Such a waste.
I don't understand.
Lanfear sighed, speaking as if she were explaining to a child.
Those who can channel can be turned to the shadow by force, in the right circumstances. Mihail has been having trouble here making the process work as easily as he should. He needs women if he's going to turn men easily.
Light,
Perrin thought. Did Rand know this could happen to people? Were they planning to do the same thing to him?
I'd be careful around those two, Lanfear said. They're powerful.
Then you should be speaking more softly, Perrin whispered.
Bah, it's easy to bend sound in this place. I could shout for all I'm worth and they wouldn't hear. They're drinking, you see. They brought the wine through with them. They're here in the flesh, of course. I doubt their leader warned them of the dangers of that.
Perrin looked up at the guards. The two men sipped at their wine, chuckling to one another. As Perrin watched, the first slumped to the side, then the other did as well. They slipped out of their seats and hit the ground.
What did you do?
Fork root in the wine, Lanfear said.
Why are you helping me? Perrin demanded.
I'm fond of you, Perrin.
You're one of the Forsaken.
I was, Lanfear said. That privilege has been removed from me. The Dark One discovered I was planning to help Luz Theron win. Now I...
She froze, looking toward the sky again. What did she see in those clouds? Something that made her grow pale. She vanished a moment later. Perrin tried to decide what to do. He couldn't trust her, of course. However, she was good with the wolf dream. She managed to appear next to him without making any sound at all. That was tougher than it seemed. She had to still the air as it moved out of the way when she arrived. She had to land just precisely so that she didn't make noise, and had to mute her clothing's rustle. With a start, Perrin realized that this time she'd also been masking her scent. He'd only been able to smell her, her scent was that of soft night lily, after she'd begun speaking to him. Uncertainly, he crawled out of the pit and approached the shack. Both men were asleep. What happened to men who slept in the dream? Normally, this would have sent them back to the waking world, but they were here in the flesh. He shivered, thinking of what had been done to them.
Turned?
Was that the word she'd used?
Light. It seemed unfair. Not that the pattern is ever fair,
Perrin acknowledged, quickly searching through the hut. He found the dream spike driven into the ground under the table. The silvery piece of metal looked like a long tent spike, carved with designs down its length. It was similar to the other one he'd seen, but not exactly the same. He pulled it free, then waited, hand on his hammer, expecting Slayer to come for him.
"He's not here,"
Lanfear said.
"Light!"
Perrin jumped, hammer raised. He turned.
"Why do you keep appearing like that, woman?"
"He searches for me," she said, glancing skyward. "I'm not supposed to be able to do this, and he grows suspicious. If he finds me, he'll know for certain, and I will be destroyed, captured and burned for an eternity."
"You expect me to feel sorry for you, one of the Forsaken?"
Perrin snapped.
"I chose my master," she said, studying him. "This is my price, unless I can find a way free of it."
"What?"
"I think you have the best chance," she said. "I need you to win, Perrin, and I need to be at your side when you do."
He snorted.
"You haven't learned any new tricks, have you? Take your offers elsewhere. I'm not interested."
He turned the dream spike over in his fingers. He had never been able to figure out how the other one worked.
"You have to twist it at the top."
Lanfear held out a hand. Perrin eyed her.
"You don't think I could have taken it out on my own if I'd wanted?"
she asked, amused.
"Who was it who put Mihail's little pets down for you?"
He hesitated, then handed it over. She ran her thumb from tip to mid-length, and something clicked inside it. She reached up and twisted the head about. Outside, the faint wall of violet shrank and vanished. She handed it back.
"Twist it again to set up the field. The longer you twist, the larger it will grow. Then slide your finger in the reverse of what I did to lock it. Be careful. Wherever you set it will have ramifications in the waking world as well as this world, and it will stop even your allies from moving in or out. You can get through with a key, but I do not know it for this spike."
"Thank you,"
Perrin said grudgingly. At his feet, one of the slumbering men grunted, then rolled to his side.
Is there really no way to resist being turned? Nothing they can do?"
"A person can resist for a short time," she said. "A short time only. The strongest will fail eventually. If you are a man facing women, they will beat you quickly."
"It shouldn't be possible," Perrin said, kneeling. "Nobody should be able to force a man to turn to the shadow. When all else is taken from us, this choice should remain."
"Oh, they have the choice,"
Lanfear said, idly nudging one with her foot.
"They could have chosen to be gentled. That would have removed the weakness from them, and they could never have been turned."
"That's not much of a choice."
"This is the weave of the pattern, Perrin Ibarra. Not all options will be good ones. Sometimes you have to make the best of a bad lot and ride the storm."
He looked at her sharply.
"And you imply that's what you did? You joined the shadow because it was the best option? I don't buy it for a moment. You joined for power. Everyone knows it."
"Think what you will, wolf pup,"
she said, eyes growing hard.
"I've suffered for my decisions. I've borne pain, agony, excruciating sorrow because of what I've done in my life. My suffering goes beyond what you could conceive.
And of all of the Forsaken, Perrin said, you chose your place and accepted it most readily.
She sniffed. You think you can believe stories 3,000 years old?
Better to trust them than the words of one such as yourself.
As you wish, she said, then looked down again at the sleeping man. If it helps you to understand, wolf pup, you should know that many think men like these are killed when the turning happens, and then something else invades the body. Some think that, at least.
She vanished. Perrin sighed, then tucked the dream spike away and shifted back to the rooftop. As soon as he appeared, Gull spun about, drawing an arrow.
Is it you, Perrin Ebarra?
It's me.
I wonder if I should ask for proof, Gull said, arrow still drawn. It seems to me that in this place one could easily change one's appearance.
Perrin smiled.
Appearance isn't all. I know that you have two Gaishine. One you want, one you do not. Neither seems content to act as proper Gaishine. If we live through this, one might marry you.
One might, Gull agreed, lowering his bow. It's looking like I'll have to take both or neither. Perhaps it is punishment for making them put away their spears, though it is not my choice that makes them do so, but their own. He shook his head. The dome is gone. Perrin held up the dream spike.
It is.
What is our next task?
To wait,
Perrin said, settling down on the rooftop,
and see if removing the dome draws Slayer's attention.
What if it does not?
Then we go to the next likely place to find him,
Perrin said, rubbing his chin.
And that is wherever there are wolves to kill.
We heard you,
Candler yelled to Andrel amid the firefight.
Burn me if it isn't true. We were in my shop above and we heard you speak, begging. We decided we had to attack. Now or never.
Weaves exploded through the room. Earth erupted and fire shot from Taim's people at the dais toward the Two Rivers men. Fades slunk across the room with cloaks that did not move, unsheathing swords. Andrel scrambled away from Candler, head low, making for Pravara, Jonath, and Amarin at the side of the room. Candler had heard him? The gateway he'd made, just before Taim heaved him in the air. It must have opened, so small he hadn't been able to see it. He could make gateways again, but only very small ones. What good was that? Enough to stop Taim's balefire, he thought, reaching Pavara and the others. None of the three were in a state to fight. He wove a gateway, hitting the wall, pushing to... Something changed. The wall vanished. Andrel sat, stunned for a moment. Blasts and explosions in the room assaulted his ears. Candler and the others fought well, but the Two Rivers lads faced fully trained Aes Sedai and maybe one of the Forsaken. They were dropping one by one. The wall was gone. Andrel stood up slowly, then walked back toward the center of the room. Taim and his people fought on the dais. The weaves coming from Candler and his lads were flagging. Andrel looked to Taim and felt a powerful, overwhelming surge of anger. The Black Tower belonged to the Ashaman, not this man. It was time for the Ashaman to reclaim it. Andrel roared, raising his hands beside him and wove a gateway. The power rushed through him. As always, his gateways snapped into place faster than any others, growing larger than a man of his strength should be able to make. He built this one the size of a large wagon. He opened it facing Taim's channelers, snapping it into place right as they released their next round of deadly weaves. The gateway only covered the distance of a few paces and opened behind them. Weaves, crafted by Taim's women and men, hit the open gateway, which hung before Andrel like a haze in the air, then exploded out behind them. Weaves killed their own masters, burning away Aes Sedai, killing Ashaman and the few remaining Murdral. Straining at the exertion, Andrel bellowed louder and opened small gateways on Loghain's bonds, snapping them. He opened another one directly in the floor beneath Loghain's chair.
dropping it from the room to a place far away from the Black Tower, one that was, the light send, safe. The woman called Hesalam fled. As she darted through a gateway of her own, Taim followed with a couple of others. The rest were not so wise. For a moment later, Andral opened a gateway as wide as the floor, dropping the other women in Ashaman through it to plummet hundreds of feet.